December 2nd, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. I think I can let the camera get on me. Check the hat. How's it looking? Ooh, they're real upset with me walking around with this hat out here in Washington. Ooh. All these concussions, though, with my Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know what to make of it. Hey, listen. John Q from Detroit, Michigan, weighing in early, wants to know what I think about Mayweather Pacquiao, hour number 4. But he already has his prediction. Tisha from San Diego is ahead of all of you slow readers. She has both books, Lessons in Disaster and JFK. She says she's only 25% done, though, with JFK, but she will be done by December 16th. I don't know. We'll make the final decision next week. Doesn't seem like a lot of you all got the books, from what I can tell. I will not be discussing that topic by myself, so we'll either push it back into 2010 or we will kill it. But John Q from Detroit, Michigan, said he also wanted me to know he saw both of Minister Farrakhan's webcasts Saturday as well as Sunday, and according to him, he's saying it is a wrap. President Obama cannot fix this problem. And John also adds, man plans and a law plans, and a law is the best of planners. That's John Q, Detroit, Michigan. He weaved in the Quran, a fight prediction, and let me know that he watched 2 webcasts on Saturday and Sunday. It's quite a feat. Rod Guignard still trying to find the Donald Byrd album, the most slept on Donald Byrd album. He says Donald Byrd put out much of his music in the 1970s when he was in his 40s, and if I'm not mistaken, I think that cut was from the album Steppin' in Tomorrow in 1974. But Places and Spaces had several pop cuts on it as well. Close but no cigar, they say, right? He also adds that Donald Byrd recorded on Elektra after leaving all those years with Blue Note, when he made some lightweight funk albums, and he's not a fan of this one, which I only vaguely remember. Come to think of it, that cut also could have been Star Trippin' from his words, sounds, colors, and shapes. Not too sure about it. Sorry for being so vague. Everybody, head on over to blackelectorate.com. Survey the news. Or you can watch, because I head over there on my own. The blackelectorate.com logo. A little symbolism behind that logo. I'm not going to tell you all what that is. I don't want to get no licensing problems. I never confirmed something about that logo. But in any event, blackelectorate.com, current events. All my allhiphop.com viewers will be coming to you soon. I'm going to talk about the December 8th launch of Universal Music and Sony Music's Vivo video channel powered by YouTube. If you are looking for videos from artists on Universal Records or Sony, you will not be seeing them in their regular spots on YouTube as of Monday, December 8th. And you can bank on it, as the great Buddy Landell used to say. Article from the Wall Street Journal. Black Caucus and White House standoffs. As the standoff between the White House and the Congressional Black Caucus dragged on into Tuesday night, continuing to cloud the prospects of a vote Wednesday morning to overhaul supervision of banks. House Financial Services Committee Chairman Barney Frank, Democrat of Massachusetts, has scheduled a 10:15 a.m. vote on a bill to rework financial regulation. The 10 Congressional Black Caucus members of his committee have said that they won't vote for it until their concerns on a range of other issues relating to the economy are met by the White House. One problem, it's unclear to many what their concerns are, and CBC members are refusing to discuss it publicly. Says here, I don't think anybody is going to say anything, Representative Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat of Missouri, told reporters after an evening vote. I'm not sure because we are still studying and discussing. Asked if a Congressional Black Caucus lawmakers were having more meetings about it later Tuesday night, he said, I can't remember. He said it was unclear if the CBC would vote for Representative Frank's bill because we are still studying and discussing. Okay. Bloomberg, Obama joins Johnson in escalating unpopular war he inherited. Let me read this. Let me hit this one more time. Meet the press in January. Remember this?
We're beyond the point of saying that Barack Obama inherits a lot of messes around the world. He also inherits a lot of activities that President Bush began, and he's going to have to make some very difficult decisions about whether to continue them. One of his intelligence chiefs said to me that President Bush wrote a lot of checks that Barack Obama is going to have to cash. Mm. And I think what he means by that is there are covert actions that have begun that Obama is going to have to look at even before he fully understands them. Another one of Obama's aides said to me, you know, in many ways, we have a Bay of Pigs problem, which is the action that President Kennedy inherited from Dwight Eisenhower, and he didn't fully understand it. Pakistan's a great example of this. President Bush last summer authorized a series of ground actions that included going after non-Al-Qaeda members. And Barack Obama's going to have to decide, do you do that or not?
That was January. Meet the press. Obama joins Johnson in escalating unpopular war he inherited. This is from Bloomberg today, SubbyBlackElectorate.com. Says, President Barack Obama's announcement that he'll send 30,000 more U.S. troops to fight in Afghanistan had echoes of many of his predecessors whose ranks he has joined as a war president. It is a collection of leaders with mixed political fates. History suggests failure at least as likely as success, with early assurances collapsing under the weight of events the presidents couldn't contain. More often than not, presidents misjudge what they achieve through these conflicts, and then they are unable to control the domestic agenda when they are becoming distracted by war, said Robert Dalek, a presidential historian. This idea of guns and butter that Johnson talked about is false, he said, referring to former President Lyndon Johnson, who escalated U.S. involvement in Vietnam at the same time he expanded social welfare programs at home. Obama's challenge is greater in many ways because he's also pressing to remake healthcare, which represents about 18% of the nation's economy, reversing an unemployment rate of 10.2% and dealing with a record $1.4 trillion deficit. And the war itself, polls show, is increasingly unpopular. The White House estimates the cost of the additional troops will be $30 billion next year. Versions of healthcare legislation are estimated to cost between $848 billion and more than $1 trillion over 10 years. Some Democrats are pushing the president to propose a second economic stimulus package on top of the $787 billion plan. And Obama has said he wants climate change legislation, which may also prove costly. I'm going to give you some city politics. Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Atlanta Mayor Reed maps plans, but Norwood not conceding. As Kasim Reed began making plans Wednesday for his first term as Atlanta's mayor, opponent Mary Norwood still had not conceded defeat and said she will seek a recount. If I didn't think there's a possibility things might change, that would be different, said Norwood, who trails Reed by 750 votes. Any of my Atlanta listeners wrapped up in this? Got news on the ground for me? Mark Henderson with the Fulton County Elections Office told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on Wednesday all but about 700 provisional ballots had been counted. Those ballots cannot be tabulated until Thursday, the deadline for those voters to provide verification they were eligible. I think a recount when you're this close is appropriate, absolutely appropriate, Norwood said during a Wednesday morning press conference at her headquarters. We came within a razor-thin margin of not being able to say we're the front runner today. Norwood said she has not heard from Kasim Reed, who declared victory shortly after midnight. In an interview on WAGA-TV, Reed said that if he is indeed the mayor-elect, he would like to have Mrs. Norwood involved in an important way if she would like to continue to be involved in municipal government. I think that she has an important voice, and I think that it's vital that we work together to unify the city that we both love, Reed said. That's Atlanta. Let's go to Baltimore. Be more. Oh, man, my favorite. Man, this is going through a lot. Dick convicted of embezzlement. Man, jury acquits mayor of felony theft charge, but guilty finding could force her from office. The city will still continue to move forward. Prosecutor calls it a sad day for Baltimore. Was it any more sad than all those episodes of The Wire? I ask. Baltimore Sun article says jurors in the theft trial of Sheila Dixon convicted the Baltimore mayor Tuesday on a single charge of taking gift cards intended for the city's poor. Although Dixon was acquitted of a felony theft charge, her misdemeanor conviction could force her from office. Jurors deliberated more than 6 days to hearing the Democrat was accused of using or keeping $630 worth of gift cards. She allegedly solicited most of the cards from a wealthy developer and then bought electronics at Best Buy, clothes at Old Navy, and other items at Target, or Target, as you all say. Damn it, man. That was $630 worth of gift cards. That's how we get down in Baltimore, if this is true. Let me rewind selector on that for you. The jurors deliberated more than 6 days after hearing the Democrat was accused of using or keeping $630 worth of gift cards. She allegedly solicited most of the cards from a wealthy developer and then bought electronics at Best Buy, clothes at Old Navy, and items at Target. The jury convicted her on one count of fraudulent misappropriation by a fiduciary and acquitted her on two counts of felony theft and one count of misconduct in office. Jurors failed to reach a verdict on another count of fraudulent misappropriation by a fiduciary. The conviction carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, but prosecutors have not decided whether they will seek jail time. The city will still continue to move forward, Dixon said outside the courthouse. After the verdict, this city will continue to run. We won't miss a step. Man, is that a witch hunt or is that just straight whackness in the name of blackness? $630 worth of gift cards, or is that a conspiracy against the black mayor? That's another article of blackelect.com, column from the Baltimore Sun. Raw deal or right call, verdict opinions abound. Residents debate whether race and gender played a role. In the middle of his oyster and beer lunch inside Lexington Market, Melvin Burgess got word that Mayor Sheila Dixon had been found guilty of a single charge of embezzlement, then proceeded to debate the closest person with a dissenting opinion. Burgess had never met Beverly Turner, but the topic made for good fodder, with Burgess calling the conviction no big deal and Turner showing no sympathy for the beleaguered Baltimore Democrat. It was a conversation that took place throughout the corners of the market in the city between residents captivated by the more than 2 week trial. Some declared that the mayor has embarrassed Baltimore and should resign from office. Others argued that Dixon was targeted because of her race and gender. Dixon is Baltimore's first black female mayor. Burgess was one of the few people interviewed who wholeheartedly defended Dixon. You've got people in office doing worse than that, said Burgess, a 54-year-old Baltimore native. She was targeted. They think we've got too many blacks in City Hall. Turner countered by saying that the jury took 7 days to weigh evidence and that it was obvious that Dixon knew the gift cards weren't hers, adding that the mayor makes a decent living. Why would she need gift cards? If my boyfriend gave me a $25 gift card, I wouldn't even accept it because I'm worth more than $25. That woman was crooked. I don't care what nobody says. Now that sounds like a little female on female hate there. Let me read that back. Rewind selector. I gotta put the violins on that. Now Beverly Turner is I'm assuming it's a black woman, but anyway, it's a woman. She says she's against Mayor Sheila Dixon of Baltimore. She says Turner countered by saying that the jury took 7 days to weigh evidence and that it was obvious that Dixon knew that the gift cards weren't hers. adding that the mayor makes a decent living. Why would she need gift cards? If my boyfriend gave me a $25 gift card, I wouldn't even accept it because I'm worth more than $25. That woman was crooked. I don't care what nobody says. Little edge there. The jury convicted Dixon on one count of fraudulent misappropriation by a fiduciary. After hearing evidence that she used or kept gift cards to stores such as Best Buy and Target. I want to put some of you all in a quandary. Is this a continued conspiracy against the black mayor, or is this just a whackness or shenanigans, as my friend says, in the name of blackness? Let's move over here. Another Wall Street article caught my ear. This is all. The thing I'm reading here is up at blackelectorate.com. Snoop Dogg's advice to entrepreneurs: try to find something that's missing. Snoop Deal Double Jizzle saying. Every so often, the Wall Street Journal checks in with the Dog Father. In this case, heard on the street means we're hearing hip hop. We recently caught up with Calvin Snoop Dogg Brodus at all of all places at the New York Stock Exchange, where the Grammy-nominated rapper was on hand to ring the opening bell during Global Entrepreneurship Week. Snoop, having sold more than 30 million albums worldwide, is now turning his attention to the business world. His latest album, Malice in Wonderland, is due out December 8th. Now, yes, we will be reviewing, inshallah, Malice in Wonderland next week. Snoop Dogg's new album coming out December 8th. His ventures include everything from a clothing line for cool pups to Skullcrusher, a mini subwoofer headphone. Next up, his own online music distribution site, named naturally www.digitalonlinegangstagrooves.com. The ticker symbol DOGG, we hasten to add, is not yet taken. Snoop is tall and stylish, and not many people ring the opening bell of the New York Stock Exchange wearing Chanel sunglasses. But the Wall Street Journal, unintimidated, pressed him for more on his plans. Really, what's next in business for you, Snoop? We were rewarded. Someday, it turns out, we might all be shopping at Snooper Markets. Snoop Dogg tells entrepreneurs, find something that's missing. We're still on blackelectric.com. Doing the news. Go to the Minnesota Spokes Recorder. Black bank proposed for the Northside community. Is it a new beginning or a repeat of embarrassing history? Article says these are tough economic times for opening new banks, new credit unions, or new savings and loans, particularly in an economically depressed community. And so I watched with great interest upon hearing that a new community bank will be chartered in North Minneapolis. Now, this is from November 24th. I was surprised and delighted to learn. Any of my Minnesota listeners out there can weigh in. It says here, I was surprised and delighted to learn when I saw the documentation that this would be a black bank in the black community, a bank that the prospectus indicates will allow Northside residents to become bankable. And as the bank increases its capacity, residents would gain access to additional financial resources. What could be more welcome? Minnesota-based Thrivent Financial is the source of unquestionable community enthusiasm, as they have offered a $500,000 challenge grant to the Urban League of Minneapolis. For this to become reality, the Urban League must match the $500,000 with its investors. I have learned that the project is in the feasibility stage and that Thrivent is also supporting a consultant to assist in the development of the project in order to help ensure the raising of capital for the bank. Like me, I'm sure alert readers are asking the obvious key question. How much capital above the $1,500,000 plus $500,000 must be raised to guarantee the solvency of this bank when it opens its doors? $10 million, more or less? I look forward to the public information meetings introducing the project and its investors to learn of their fiduciary strength and fiduciary reputation. That is our word of the day. Fiduciary. Fiduciary. Certainly the organizers are doing everything they can to show the community has rallied behind this concept and embraces the creation of this new bank. What discerning readers and I want to know is what is in the plan to prevent a repeat of the history of the last black bank in North Minneapolis. In the 1970s, the last time the black community of the Twin Cities was told they controlled and owned a black bank, it turned out to be quite an embarrassment when it was uncovered that the black bank on Plymouth Avenue was neither black owned nor black controlled, but loaned black money to white borrowers before it went under. Thus, I'm sure we will all want to know more about this new bank's capitalization and want to hear what steps will be taken to ensure that those who put their life savings into the trusted hands of the bank's investors will have those savings protected by more than just the FDIC. Minneapolis. So many articles at blackelectorate.com. Remember Tiffany? Remember Star Buckwild used to make fun of Tiffany on BET? She used to say www.bet.com. Whatever happened to Tiffany? I want to head over. Hazel Trice Edney, the editor-in-chief of the NNPA. I remember Hazel when she was just starting out as a writer for the NNPA. Hazel Trice Edney, NNPA editor-in-chief. I used to see her every time I went to Congress, I would see her up there working hard to get a story. She writes an article, Black joblessness becoming showdown between black leaders and black president. Says here, African-American joblessness, nearly twice the national rate, is quickly becoming the first showdown between black leaders and the nation's first black president. As national black and civil rights leaders raise their voices, telling the Obama administration it's time to end the jobs crisis in the black community. We're sending a strong message to the president and Congress that we need to step up. We need immediate jobs. Not sometime 6, 8, and 10 months down the road, National Urban League President Mark Morial said in an interview with the NNPA News Service. African-American leaders are not just saying do something, we're offering solutions. Morial has sent a letter to the Obama administration and congressional leaders outlining specific recommendations for job creation as President Obama prepares for a job summit this week in the wake of national unemployment numbers that grew into double digits, 10.2% in October. In his letter dated November 24th, Morial reminds the administration that the black community has suffered double-digit jobless rates for more than a year. While I applaud the administration for publicly acknowledging the gravity of our nation's employment situation, I would add that double-digit unemployment has been a reality for communities of color since last summer, for African Americans since August of 2008, and for Latinos since February of 2009, he writes. As president and CEO of the National Urban League, the nation's oldest and largest community-based movement devoted to empowering African Americans to enter the economic and social mainstream, I have firsthand knowledge of the tremendous obstacles these families have been facing. Sounds like he's talking about his own family, right? He says, I have firsthand knowledge of the tremendous obstacles these families have been facing, not just since national unemployment reached 10.2% in October, but for over a year now. Morial's strongly worded letter came on the heels of a November 17th statement issued by leading African American civil rights groups, the NAACP headed by Ben Jealous, the Leadership Council on Civil Rights headed by Wade Henderson, and other major civil rights organizations. Let me read one more paragraph, because I have also weighed in. You really can't have civil rights leaders pushing economic issues. I think Mark Morial and the Urban League are positioned nicely. I think Mark Morial and the Urban League have a lot to offer in these times, in some ways more than the NAACP. We'll see, though, if they live up to the potential and fill the void for an economic voice that the black community lacks in a political sense. The article continues. I'm reading Hazel Trice Edney's article, Black Joblessness Becoming Showdown Between Black Leaders and Black President. You know, this has been a sore spot. President Obama and the black press have been going back and forth at these press conferences at the White House over this issue. Most blacks that are intellectuals in D.C. or political professionals or media operatives are not satisfied with President Obama's responsiveness to the issue of black unemployment. Hazel writes, despite an effective and bold recovery package, we are still facing a prolonged period of high unemployment. 2 years from now, absent further action, we are likely to have unemployment at 8% or more, a higher rate than that attained even at the worst point of the last two downturns, said the joint statement, which was issued in conjunction with a forum sponsored by the Washington, D.C.-based Economic Policy Institute. Joblessness on this scale creates enormous social and economic problems and denies millions of families the ability to meet even their most basic needs. It also threatens our nation's future prosperity by casting millions more children into poverty, foreclosing educational opportunities for many, and limiting the investment and innovation that will fuel future growth, and dimming long-term labor market prospects, especially for younger workers. Well, I wrote something about this at CedricMuhammad.com. I'm going to give you a little bit of it. There's two wars going on at once. There's a war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, I guess you could say, and there's an economic war domestically. Pretty soon they're going to combine when these soldiers come home and can't find jobs. I'll read to you what I wrote, maybe the most serious piece that I have penned since the economic crisis. We'll be right back. Send in your comments. I'm going to catch up on them. Prince Akbar, he says, Cedric, don't you find it suspect that Tiger Woods is destroyed the same week as President Obama has become a war hawk? The whole week reminds me of the movie Wag the Dog. Now, I don't want to get too much into this with Tiger, but I mean, in a worst or poor part of the black experience, you could say Tiger became black overnight. Now, stereotypically, that is. Supposed domestic problems, right? Driving a jiggy, extravagant car, crashing it right in front of his house. Not talking to the police. Not cooperating with an investigation. In the minds of some people, that is the black experience right there.
Cedric Muhammad.